You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your host, Christian. I'm still not used to the camera, so sometimes I'm like looking around, like back in the day when we used to record in the attic. I used to just look around and talk while I'm talking to the microphone. Now I gotta actually pay attention to the camera. But welcome back to another episode. If you're watching us through YouTube, thank you for subscribing to our channel. Make sure you go on top on the link, hit the subscribe button. I think it's a thumbs up. If you're watching us through Facebook, make sure you go to our page, La Verdad LTD, or on any of the social media platforms out there. So Instagram, Twitter, you might be able to find us there as at La Verdad LTD. Go ahead and add us there so you could keep up to date on what we're doing, the events that we're doing, and the podcast that we're doing every single week, right? And with me, we have Marissa, who usually you might hear her at the group talks that we usually have. Usually on my left hand side we have V Fig. She's taking the day off. She's enjoying a bachelorette party in Wisconsin. So shout out V Fig. You're having a lot of fun, probably with a hangover right
now.
We
miss you.
Marissa, how you been, man?
I've been good. I'm happy to be here. Still recovering from the week and the fourth. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like coming back to work the next day from the fourth, it should have been like the weekend. I'm like, why am I here?
But all
right,
Monday.
Cool, right?
that really sucked because like it definitely felt like a Monday when I went back to work, and I was so on like slow mode the whole day, and like, I didn't want to do anything. I was just like really like out of it. I drank like 2 cups of coffee. I usually only drink one cup of coffee.
Okay.
And I had to drink 2 and it still didn't help for the rest of the day.
That's the worst.
So also on my right hand side or left hand side if you're watching the video, we have our guest for today, Kiara. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me both.
We're definitely gonna go into detail on what you do and what why we brought you onto the show. But at first I wanted to talk to Marissa real quick. And see how you felt being in this side of the podcast. Now, usually you're in the group talk, so is it weird? Is it?
I'm nervous. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm excited. I get to, you know, it's like a learning experience for me and get to be in an interview, so it's kind of neat. But I think I'm just so used to being behind the scenes, but it's cool. I like it.
So just to give you a little background, we do like 3 different types of podcasts within this one podcast, right? If that makes sense. So we do the group talks, which is just like a chill session of a bunch of people together in a table, and we don't record that on video. It's just on the audio side. And Marissa is usually part of that. That's why I asked her. I was like, do you feel weird? Because this
you're
is more
camera
of like,
now.
Yeah. This is like the one-on-one where we interview people. And then we have another one, which we just started this season. It's called El Backstage. And that's where we interview like artists that come in to the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center, because we have a partnership, which, by the way, I want to exhort everyone to go to their link. We have a partnership with the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center. That we use their space to do the podcast, which is where we're at right now. And they bring artists from all over the world. Right now, specifically Puerto Rico, they have a series called Borinquen Me Llama, and they're bringing different artists from Puerto Rico to do different things. So they had the muralist here in Chicago, which, by the way, if you guys live here in Chicago and you have a chance to go to by Armitage and Pulaski, where the cultural center is at, across the street from the cultural center, there's 2 big beautiful murals.
They did.
One is a skull, like a silver skull. I don't know if you saw it when you pulled up. I know they're doing work right now, so it's kind of hard to see. It's like a silver metallic looking skull with the Puerto Rican flag on top, kind of signifying the deaths that happened because of Hurricane Maria. And then right next to it is a portrait of an activist, and Michael was just letting us know right now the meaning behind it. So if you have a chance to go over to the Cultural Center across the street in the parking lot, they have those two murals, and they also have a an actual display of the Puerto Rican flag, and it like turns around. It's really cool, like sculpture that turns, and you can see the Puerto Rican flag, the Chicago flag, black and white Puerto Rican flag, and then I think some debris and things that came off of the designer's house during Hurricane Maria. So like some of the debris, escombros, I think they call it. So definitely check it out. It's across the street from the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center on 4048 West Armitage Avenue. I don't know how I remember that address, but I got it. So Kiara, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good?
Yeah, thank you.
I got all the advertising out, all the
all the plugs, right?
Now we can chill and talk, right? So you're from Chicago area?
Correct. I was born in Chicago. After I was born, my parents moved us to Cicero. Okay. They raised three kids there. We had my abuela in there. We had my tios in there. You know, typical Latino household, right? Then everybody started having kids and moved out.
Yo, but that's so cool, though. And sorry to cut you off. That's so cool, though, when you grow up with a big family like that. I think I grew up, my grandma used to live on top of us on the apartment building. So, like, all the things that I could remember of my grandma was during that time, because we would go upstairs to eat breakfast and then come downstairs. My mom would have lunch and then go back upstairs for dinner for breakfast. So is it kind of similar?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Except my abuela cooked morning breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My mom never cooked. Now she's starting to learn how to cook because, you know, my grandma's not around. Someone's got to feed us.
Yeah.
But just like that, you know, we were very tight with my grandma. She was Cuban, only spoke Spanish. Okay. And that's how I learned speaking Spanish. I'd communicate with my grandma. My tios lived with us too. And then eventually they had their families and left the nest. And I'm still there with my parents until, you know, I have my family and have to move.
I feel you. I live at home too. No shame in that. So.
No.
That seems to be a very common thing within the Latino community, but also with one of my boys. He's Arabic, and then I have friends and family that are friends that are Indian, and they have kind of the similar culture. Whereas, like, I talk to some of my friends, like my white friends, and they'll be like, "Nah, man,
they've been 18, gone.
I had to get out."
I thought that was 18.
And it's not that they wanted to. It's like, "Yo, you're 18 now. You gotta get out of here." I felt like I had to leave, like around for college. I left, but then I came back, and it's like the family's like, "Oh no, you should stay. You should do this." So it's a very different. Very different mentality that the culture
is. And I honestly, I love that tightness I have with my family. Yeah. Like, my parents are my best friends. My mom's like my personal best friend. I go to her for like love and friend issues. Mm-hmm. And my dad's my business best friend. Like, "Dad, what do you think I should do here? Like, what kind of move?" So, like, their guidance has been super helpful for me, especially my sister as well. So, without that bond, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing right now.
So, I know that you practice law.
Correct.
Right? And we could talk a little bit more about how you got there. Is that part of the family? Does it run in the family, or are you
the
first
one? No one's an attorney in my family. I'm the first in my generation. Okay. And I became a lawyer because my parents told me I was going to be a lawyer. Yeah. Like, when we were all young, they sat us all down. It was my brother, me, and my sister. And they told my brother, "You're going into the military, and you're going to be great at it." And he did well. He went to West Point, did his thing, told me, "You're going to be a lawyer." I'm a lawyer. And my sister was supposed to be a doctor, but she turned out to be a civil engineer. Not so bad.
That's cool.
Right?
That's so
good
cool,
for her.
Man.
Yeah. Good for her.
I do that with my daughter now. I tell her every day she's going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And she's really into it. I buy her little things that are... And then sometimes I feel bad. I'm like, "Man, maybe I should just let her choose what she wants to do." Oh. But then I'm like... Let me throw in a little book here that's about, like, a doctor or whatnot.
Well, you know your kids best. Like, my mom's favorite thing. Like, when she knows what I'm up to, I'm like, "Man, Mom, how'd you know that?" She's like, "Because I gave birth to you." You know? Like, she knows me.
I'm your mother.
Yes, I'm your mom. Like, mother does know best. So they knew what we were going to be, and I'm glad they helped us out. Because when you're growing up, you don't know what to do. They throw you in college, and there's all these options for you, and it's hard. Yep. It's really hard. And I've always been good at writing and being able to, like, compose a bunch of freaking papers and stuff like that. So, like, reading comprehension. Yeah. So, like, you're going to be an attorney. And my sister's the opposite. She's big on math. Okay. I can't do, well, I can do a little bit of numbers. Yeah. But she's way better at numbers than me.
The same way. Yeah. Get that, man. No, me and numbers don't get along. Right, like, That's why they invented a calculator. And I look
exactly.
At that and do it all. But when you were young, they were telling you to kind of get into law, right?
Exactly.
And then, mm-hmm. Was it already set up? Were they doing a college fund for you that they have everything already kind of set up? Or
you know what? They sent us to college prep schools. Mm-hmm. So I went to a private high school in LaGrange called Nazareth Academy.
Okay, yeah.
Catholic co-ed mm-hmm. school. And there they grinded us. We were always tested. We were always prepped. So by the time I got to college, it was easy for me.
Right.
You know, exactly. You know, I was used to taking final exams. I was used to learning a ton of stuff in a short period of time being tested on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of my classmates weren't. And that's what set them
what
behind.
What college did you go to?
I went to DePaul.
Yes, DePaul. We're DePaul
here. Yes. All right.
DePaul. We fakes from DePaul. Yes. I got from DePaul.
We've had a lot of guests from DePaul, too. Yep. It's kind of funny. But it's interesting you mentioned that, right? The value of the college prep.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought about it till after I went, when I went to college, right? I went to a public high school, and yeah, I don't want to dog public high school, but it's being a product of public high school, I know mm-hmm. how hard it is when you go into college. And I remember we had this conversation here in the podcast before where I had a harder time in college because I wasn't prepped.
Yeah, you were
right? I didn't know what mm-hmm. a freaking final was. You know, I didn't know. And not even just that, but, like, I didn't know what financial aid was, and that's another topic. But I didn't know how to take a test. I didn't know how to
prepare.
Take notes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to take notes.
Yeah.
Like, my notes were like, and to this day, I put myself in and I learned it because of my career and what I had to do. I learned how to take notes, but my notes were horrible. I didn't know how to grasp and pay attention in class. I didn't know the concept of an hour and a half class versus just 45 minutes. Like, that didn't happen. So I find it very important to have our kids going into college prep at an early age.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want to throw them in, and you're at this point now you're paying.
Yeah,
you're paying big time money for the college,
it
especially
is.
DePaul.
Yeah,
and if you don't know what you're doing, you're gonna it's
wasting
like sink
money.
Or swim.
Yeah,
right?
Yep.
So you had that aspect because mm-hmm. of high school,
correct?
And then you went to college. So as soon as you enrolled in college, did you have your degree already kind of figured out? Or?
You know what? I applied for the commerce school, so now it's Driehaus of Business. And I did finance. I was gonna do accounting, and that was tough. And like I said, I'm good at math, but not
that's
that good.
Numbers.
Yeah, yes. You know. But I did finance. That was ended up being my major. I did do a minor in community service when I was there. I don't think I told you that, but I did do a minor in community service. So part
and what
of
is that, like, what?
So like they send you all over the city. Like you pick an area. Sometimes we were in schools. Sometimes we were in hospitals. I like schools. I like kids a lot.
Okay.
So I was always in a school, and we would help with the after school programs
okay.
and studying because, like you said, a lot of kids struggle in
yeah,
the classroom,
it's big time.
And it's hard when you go home to a parent, especially if you have a parent who doesn't speak the language.
Right.
Teach your child this. And I had that issue too growing up. My mom only spoke Spanish and she learned English when she got here, and we would go to her for math. She was good at math because math is the same in every language.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's a universal language.
Exactly. But you know, when it came to like grammar or English, she couldn't really help, so I had to really depend on me.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that's why I got good at it, because I self-taught myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, we helped out with different schools and after school programs. And I did that all the way through law school, too.
Wow.
I did that. It was a program called Restorative Justice Class. And we would visit Southside schools, and we would work with the kids who were always in trouble. You know, like, mm-hmm. like, why are you messing up?
Like, what's going on? Where,
yeah, yeah, like, what is wrong with you, you know? And a lot of times kids didn't have light to do homework
yeah.
at home, you know? So they would just wait till school to do it, and there was not enough time to do everything they needed to do at school. So it's kind of sad that, you know, we still have those kind of issues mm-hmm. in today's world, but it's a real thing
yeah.
out there. And a lot of people kind of, oh, it doesn't affect me. We have tunnel vision. That's your kid, and it's my kid.
Yeah. And a lot of times, too, like I think you mentioned the fact that you were helping kids that perhaps the parents weren't able to help them out, right?
Mm-hmm.
During the time that I've done a little tutoring or helping out within the community, I've noticed, too, that a lot of kids don't have anyone there to because the parents, unfortunately, have to work two, three
yep.
jobs.
They
or one parent is working
school.
Overnight,
mm-hmm.
the other one's working during the day. And when they get home, there's no one that's like pushing them to do it. They could
yeah.
they basically become an adult really early, independent really early on, and it creates either a sink or swim mentality, right?
Yeah.
So it's like do I hang out with my friends because I'm independent, my family's not around, or do I stick to my studies? So I want to ask you, like, what do you think was ingrained in your head early on? Was it the fact that they wanted you to become a lawyer was ingrained in your head early on, that you knew that studying was what you had to do as opposed to just hanging out or whatnot?
Well, like, I was really fortunate growing up. My dad would always take us to school. That was, like, his job. Take us to school in the morning. And every ride to school, there's some topic of discussion, like trying to drop knowledge on us because we were dumb. And he didn't really go to school. He had, like, a street education. And if he went to school, man, he would have been very dangerous. But one of his things, common themes he told us in the car was, whatever you put your name on, be proud of it because that's your name. Like and that. That's something that I strive to do with my work. Like, just be a better attorney than you were yesterday. You're not the best. I'm new at this. But just be better than who you were yesterday because that's your name. That's your reputation.
I like that. Yeah. I do, too.
So that's pretty much what got me into, like, the focus on your career
and
stuff.
Very interesting being that, you know, I'm a father, you know, so my daughter, she's 6 years old. So those little things like that really stay with it. In their head for forever, right?
For sure.
And I always ask questions like this because I'm kind of using this for my own. I'll be like, okay, cool, he did this for her, let me do it for my daughter too, so that she can become a doctor later on. And I notice little things like that, like little what we call it, like religious things where you're doing every single day with your daughter or with your kid, eventually it gets ingrained in their head, and then they're like, oh, I remember when Poppy told me this. Let me make sure that I always uphold. Like, one of the things that I always tell my daughter is I want to leave a legacy behind for you, right? It's not so much about the money or whatnot, because that could be zero next day. But the legacy, the name that's there that follows you, I want it to be something that you could be proud of, you know, and that you could carry that name with you, you know? So kind of the same concept where like, it's your name on things. And that's, like, such an old school mentality,
it is.
Too. Like, a lot of the Caribbean and Latino people have that. Was your dad, is your dad Mexican as
yes,
well?
Yes, he's Mexican.
It's, like, a very big thing. Like, el nombre es lo que vale todo, right? Because money comes and goes, but your name is you, is what you made.
Your character and how you,
exactly.
how you are with people and how you treat them and the things you left behind and the impressions you made on other people is really important.
Yeah, because nowadays I feel like a lot of times people don't take that as serious as they used to. You know, they used to tell you, oh, yeah, I'm going to be there at 5 o'clock and they don't show up or something like that, right? That's just a small, you know, a small thing. But bigger things nowadays, like, they don't really care, and now they put their name on social media and now you expose yourself to the whole world and that's why when you talk to the viejitos and they tell you, oh, no, okay, you know, I go eso de Facebook. It's because of that. They don't want to put their name out there. So you went to DePaul for your undergrad, right? Did you go there for
law? No.
No?
I decided to go across the street at John Marshall. I walked a whole block more. And I picked John Marshall. Why? Because I felt that I could do good there. I mean, DePaul was great, but I was not interested in their program. I didn't really like their clinics and things like that. At John Marshall, I got involved with their fair housing clinic. And I wanted to learn about that because my parents are in real estate. So I wanted to see the other side, you know, tenants issues and, you know, things like that. So I really liked that clinic as opposed to John Marshall. John Marshall had a pretty good family law clinic and it wasn't for me.
So let's break it down real quick because I'm sure a lot of people have the same questions or and some people are like, oh, I don't want to ask that question. So you get a bachelor's, right?
Yeah.
In order to practice law in let's just say, Illinois, right? Because it could vary state to state. Or,
yes.
So in order to practice law here in Illinois, you have to get your bachelor's.
Yes.
And then what?
You need your Juris Doctor, so you got to go to law school.
For how many years usually?
Well, full-time, it's 3. Okay. And if you do part-time, it's anywhere from like 5 to 7.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on how much time you have on your hands. I didn't take a gap year. I know a lot of people are like, oh, did you stop? Did you wait? Decide? No.
Well, what do they do usually when they take a...
They try to figure out their lives. Like, I have a...
Because you know what, man? Financial aid starts hitting as soon as you stop going to school and that
year. Yes. Well, I think a lot of times, too, since tuition's so pricey, I noticed that a lot of students who want to go into law want to move to a different state where it's more affordable. That way, they qualify for in-state tuition there.
Okay.
So that's why they take that gap year. Other people maybe don't want to do law.
But you don't have to. You don't have to practice where you went to school at, right?
No.
Okay. So you could have gone like into New York, come back, and then you have to pass your exam here.
Yeah. In order the bar exam. So you can take the bar exam in any state you want. And the bar exam, studying for that was such a punishing
experience. So that's like a federal, like a
yeah, state thing. Okay, so okay. Each state has their own. No states have reciprocity, which is really stupid if you ask me.
That word, I just learned it like about like a month ago.
Reciprocity?
I'm working with my regular job. I'm a consultant for government. Mm-hmm. And they mention that a lot, reciprocity. You know, when we're here looking on Google. I'm like, dude, I don't know what that means, man. But basically it means that you could just transfer over.
Yeah, like my license would be allowed to be used in Michigan or something.
So you
like
can't
that.
Do that.
Nope, I gotta go take the Michigan bar if I want to practice law in Michigan. And who wants to do that? That's studying for the bar is just another year of school, I think, because it's 3 months and you're cramming information from 20 different legal fields into a 3-day test. And that's when I know that's when I really tested my discipline. Some people don't pass the first time.
And it costs money too.
It does expensive. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Like,
prep is like 2K. Then you
really?
Yeah.
2K for
2K.
Prep?
And that's if you want to do a normal.
And what's prep like?
Like Barbary. So I did Barbary, and that was basically studying from 8 a.m. sometimes 10 o'clock at night.
Holy crap.
And I was in the library every day. I remember that summer. It was like 3 summers ago. I was studying every day for like 9 to 10. My parents wanted to pay me to go out. They're like, you need to have a social life. This is not healthy. I missed out on everything, but you know, it was worth it. I passed
now
the first time.
You can enjoy it.
Oh, you passed the first time. So so there's 2K for the prep, for the test itself.
It's like another 1,500.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And then they do
a
background.
So is it a set time that you could take that test?
Yeah, it's twice a year. So in July and February.
What I mean, like, you have to graduate and then you have a certain amount of years or time?
You can graduate and take it whenever you want. Okay. You don't have to take it right away. Yeah. A lot of people don't just go to law school and never take
It's probably not good to take it later on because you probably
forget
a lot of stuff.
Everything.
Yeah.
You
get on and the discipline, too.
Yeah.
Like, you're still in the school mode, right? So you still have your testing and you could jump in and do.
Yeah, and life happens, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes what if you get pregnant? And then you have to put that on hold. So, like, I did it right away. I graduated in May, took the test in July. I got my license in November. That's when I got sworn in. Started practicing right away.
And then do you have to go back and retest anytime? Or
no? We don't retest. We do take continuing education classes, and a lot of fields do that.
Yeah, social workers do that.
Yeah, just a refresher.
How often do you have to do that?
Every other year. I think it's somewhere between 15 to 30 hours. So it depends on, like, where you're
at. Which is cool. It keeps you going. And
And so the law's always changing. Yeah. So you have to take these classes because, like, when I started in 2015, I was doing family law for a little bit. And child support statute was way different then. Mm-hmm. And now it's like back then it was like 25% at the first kid and then it increases by 5 or 6%. Now it's how much do you see the kid? Yeah. And they factor in all
and
these
they
other
factor
things.
In the mom's income,
So now it's different. So it's really important that, you know, attorneys do these because law's always changing and I'm in real estate, so that's always changing too.
Right. Always,
especially in the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's a new fun ordinance that we gotta find out.
Every like 2-3 months is probably a new ordinance coming
up. And then you got to stay on your toes and keep landlords informed. Like, I'm obviously pro landlord. My parents have real estate. Mm-hmm. So I learned this to help them. And I tell them, like, hey, I heard of this issue, one of my deals. You need to, you know this so that it doesn't happen to you.
Right. Now, on the bar exam, is it focused on what you're going to be working with? For example, family law versus real estate?
It's you know what, they don't tell you what's going to be on there.
Also, it could be anything.
They tell you it's 20 topics. Learn these things. But what's cool about the program that I did, and most bar prep programs do this, is that they get a copy of the previous exam and they tell you what was on that exam. Okay. And they show you like correlations, like this has been tested, like contract law has been tested 4 times in a row, it's probably going to be on there. Or the last time family law was tested, it was 10 years ago, so it's probably going to be coming up soon.
Yeah.
So that's what's cool about the bar prep. They know the tips and tricks and the insider information on there.
Of what's going
to
be on.
Yeah, so definitely do it. I definitely recommend students to do it. I know it's expensive, but it makes it worthwhile because who wants to take that test more than once? It's not fun.
Yeah.
And usually when do you decide what field you want to work in?
So when I started law school, I thought I was going to do family law. I was like, yeah, I love family. I love kids. It's for me, la, la, la. Mm-hmm. But family law is not what I thought it was. It was, you know, kind of like being the third parent in the family or the third person in the marriage. And not a lot of people are amicable. They want to just fight just to fight. Like, oh, why does he get what he wants? Or
just
why
to get their...
Exactly. Be bitter. Out of spite. Yeah. You know, they don't put the child's interests at the forefront. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what sucks, because the kid suffers the most, and no one wants to see mommy and daddy fight. Mm-hmm. You know, they both want to see mommy and daddy, unless one parent's a complete idiot, then I get it. But if they're both, willing to raise a kid, then just share the parenting time. It's part of being a co-parent, right. Mm-hmm. You know?
I always thought that was really hard. I for a very long time, I did a little bit of social work. You know, mm-hmm. I was in the social work field, and I would have to go to some of these cases for, where DCFS was involved or elder abuse was involved. Mm-hmm. And I would see that. I'm like, man, like the attorney that's dealing with that case, I feel so bad for them. Not only because you're dealing with that, but you're also the one that has to bear the bad news that mm-hmm. they have to pay you and pay the retainer fees or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's pricey. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I always felt like, man, I don't know how you guys do it. That's why I got out,
because I couldn't do it. Like, I lost sleep about it. And I told myself, if it's costing me my peace, I can't do it.
That's exactly why I don't do the social work stuff. Yeah. I can't. Yeah. I'm not cut out for this field.
Yeah, I tried. You learn about, you gain a lot of perspective in terms of what you want in your partner mm-hmm. when you see that stuff. And you've seen ugly sides. Mm-hmm. And they tell you, this person wasn't like this when I first met them. I'm like, well, now they're a monster. So I got to deal with it.
Yeah.
But, that's pretty much why I got out of family law. It was just too stressful.
Would an attorney also be able to practice different types of...
Yes. Yeah. So when I started, I was waiting for my bar results to come out. And I went to a friend of mine who's now my mentor, an attorney. He's been practicing for 20 years. He was doing immigration. And he took me under his wing just so I could learn and go into courthouse and see what it was like. And immigration was tough, too. Mm-hmm.
A big one, yeah.
Mm-hmm, because you don't know what's going to happen. Right now, with all the different changes in legislation, you're kind of
all
in
the
air.
Time,
there's something new every day. Yeah. I can't keep up with that. And then not only that, it's like people who work 50 hours a week and they give you all their money and you can't promise them an outcome.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
That's very, yeah. I wouldn't be able to do it either.
Yeah, just
you
know?
Don't know what they want to, like how their income is and whether or not they could afford it.
Exactly.
And you need to eat too, as a person, you also need to
eat. Yeah, it's not easy. Out. You know, people think, oh, immigration's easy. No, it's not. You got to, show where they came through, their background, why they should be here, if they have a kid here, if they don't. Like, pretty much, if you don't have a kid here or you don't marry an American citizen, you're SOL. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I know that lately I've been hearing about certain, and maybe you could share more info on that. If not, it's okay. There's different things that you could do. For example, if you were a case of domestic violence.
Yes.
There's certain visas mm-hmm. that apply to
there.
You. It's also a very small amount of visas that are giving out.
And they're getting stricter
and
with
it's
that.
It's getting way stricter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot. I've been hearing immigration things getting stricter throughout my whole, even since I was in college. And nowadays it's even worse. I feel like now it's just become more of a topic of just like hate and racism involved behind it, as opposed to before it was just more like, oh no, well they can't do it. I had a question as far as after you get your bar exam, mm-hmm. I notice a lot of attorneys use Esquire.
Yeah.
After a name. Can you explain that a little bit?
So Esquire, I actually love that. So Esquire means that you are licensed to practice in Illinois. So when you graduate and you have your law degree, you can use your name. Like I would be Kiara C. Garza, JD. That means I got my Juris Doctorate.
Okay.
But once you get your law license, you're known as Kiara C. Garza, ESQ. So everything I sign off on has to be signed like that to reflect that I am licensed to practice in the state of Illinois. Otherwise, it can be from anybody.
Okay.
So that's what differentiates us, the Esquire thing. Some lawyers don't use it, but I like it because, man, I bust my butt for that. Yeah, I bust my ass for that.
I was a doctor, so I'll put like MD or like, you mm-hmm. know. Yeah. I think it's dope. I always saw it. It's funny because I just saw a movie a couple days ago. I forgot the name, but it's like something Esquire, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's with famous Denzel Washington.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, I was like, so I Googled it and I know what it was, but I wanted you to mention it here in the podcast because it's something that a lot of us, especially Latinos, we might not know exactly what it means.
Yeah.
Right. And we're mm-hmm. like, oh, I just see that they put ESQ.
Yeah. ESQ.
on the back of their name. So I didn't know. What I didn't know was whether or not it was after a certain amount of time that you had your license mm-hmm. that you could put that, or only certain attorneys could do that.
So once you get your license, once you're barred in your state, you can use ESQ after your name. Before that, if you have your law degree, it's just JD.
Another dumb question, right?
No, there's no such thing as a dumb question.
Attorney versus lawyer, which one do you like to use?
I like attorney. I can use either one. So lawyer, you're a lawyer once you go to law school and you complete law school. You're technically a lawyer, but you can't be an attorney until you get your license.
Ah,
okay. So, and there's different attorneys. So
similar
there's
to
power
Esquire,
of
then?
No, like exactly similar to Esquire. So like I'm an attorney at law. You have to say that attorney at law because you know there's a power of attorney.
Yeah,
and that's different. Like you could
be
in
a power of attorney over my mom.
Exactly. You want to sell your mom's estate? Well, you got a power of attorney. Or if you want to make medical decisions, then you have a healthcare power of attorney.
Yeah.
Different like that. So attorney and at law has to be used, not just attorney.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So aside from being an attorney at law, you also model?
I do.
Oh, you
my
still
God,
do that,
I did.
Or was that?
You know what? I miss it. So this is really funny. My abuela, bless her.
Which was Cuban, you mentioned? So,
yes,
so
my maternal
from
side.
From your mom.
Yes.
So your mom's Cuban?
Yes, my mom is Cuban. Cool. She's a Guantanamera. And I'm sure from Guantanamo. And she, the one who lived with us, was really big into Univision, Telemundo, watching, you know, the pageants, Miss Universe, and all that. And
Did you grow up watching Que Pasa USA? By any chance? We brought it up at the last podcast.
What channel is
so
that?
So it's
on?
A very old school. So your grandma probably was watching it a lot. It was about a Cuban family living in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I only brought it up because we talked about it last week, and I wanted to see if you knew about it.
But I didn't see
if
that.
You ever
Watch
have
Don
a chance,
Francisco.
Go to YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah,
Don Francisco.
Oh, my God. Everybody
grew up with Don Francisco. If you have a chance, YouTube, Que Pasa USA. It's a Cuban family that lives in Miami. Back in like the 70s, I think.
Okay, I'll look it up.
But I figured maybe your grandma watched it
maybe,
all.
Maybe, I
but
don't
Don
know.
Don Francisco for sure every Saturday.
Yeah, Laura, Cristina.
Oh my God,
all
my
those
grandma,
shows.
Yes.
And the novelas at night. Yeah,
yes.
And all the novelas at night. So like one thing we would always watch were the pageants, Miss Universe, and novelas. And in the novelas, there's always like this boss lady, you know,
with
a crisp suit and bold colors. And she's like, when you grow up, you got to get suits like that, you know. And then we would watch the novela, the Miss Universe pageant. And, you know, Venezuela's always winning or Colombia's always winning, the Latino countries.
Yeah.
And she's like, you see, Kiara, you got to do a lot of abs so your stomach can look like that. And, you know, but me, I was a tomboy. At that age, I love basketball. I had the hype.
Playing basketball.
Yeah, I had the hype for it.
Yes.
And
so you played?
I played a lot.
What position?
I was center or forward.
Okay.
Yeah, power forward or center.
Nice.
And my sister played with me, but she's shorter than me. Her stature, she's like about 5'3". So playing me was no fun because I'd stuff her all the time. So I had to play with the boys.
Yeah.
And the boys, you know, were my size, were better. And I would always rock like Jordans and gym shoes. And my grandma was not having it.
No.
So what she did was she signed me up for modeling school. She bought me a subscription for Teen Vogue and heels. And I looked back at basketball. I was like, I'm not going back that route. And so I got involved at modeling here. I got picked up by a Latin agency on the South Side. And I would do like editorial stuff. And then once I started doing runway, I got involved with Latino Fashion Week a lot. And I worked with them for almost 10 years. They're like one of my stepping stones into that world. And I did a bunch of runway for them, a lot of photo shoots for them, met different designers, Latino designers, güeros, wherever the heck they were from. So that was a lot of fun.
What do you feel? Do you feel Chicago has a good presence in the modeling area? Or do you think it's still lacking a lot? As opposed to like Florida or perhaps
New York
and LA.
We're like, you know, it's really hard here because we're so industrial. So a lot of Latinas don't make it here. A lot of models don't make it here.
I feel the same way about the music scene.
Which is too city-ish.
They have to go to New York or you have to go to like LA, Hollywood or something.
Or Miami. And I wasn't going to make that move.
Yeah.
You know, I know I loved modeling, but I knew it wasn't a promising career because there's just so many girls. It's super saturated.
I feel like it might be just you only have a short amount of time.
Exactly.
To either make it or break it. I feel like the same way with the music industry. I came from the music industry, so I kind of understand where, like, I just turned 30 a couple days ago. So at the age of 30, if you didn't make it in the music industry, I felt like it was like,
your time's expiring.
You need
soon.
To start doing something else. And a lot of listeners might be like, man, F you, man. I'm still trying it. And, bro, like, try to go somewhere else. And do that as a hobby. That's what happened to me. I was like, you know, I'm already hitting 22, 23. I was like, if I'm not making it now at 18, 19, or a lot of these younger guys are making it at 17, 16, then I need to start looking at something else that's gonna bring bread to my
yeah, team. Yeah, right? At the end of the day, that's what you need to focus on.
Were you able to, are you able to grasp anything or grab anything that you learned through modeling into now as an attorney?
Wow. So a lot of people that I met while doing Latino Fashion Week were just, you know, models or in and out of the industry, high turnover with that. But very few I still have tight relationships with. Mm-hmm. So actually one of the board members for Latino Fashion Week is an attorney, and he was the one I went to when I needed help. Well, just to learn immigration and do something while waiting for my law license, because I wasn't going to sit at home and, you know, twiddle my thumbs. So he's actually one of my closest friends. He is one of my mentors, and I appreciate his guidance. And he realized too that, you know, he started young too, and being a Latina, he thought that he needed to pay it forward. Mm. You know, like, hey, I'm going to teach you, and hopefully you can take what I teach you and teach another Latino or Latina. Mm. And so, yeah, that's we still have that relationship. And even the presidents of the Latino Fashion Week are still close with me. I see them. Yeah, I see them at least every other month. There's always some sort of social event. Yeah. Those are my social crowd. Like, I love it because I get to live two lives. Like, I have this really fun social life with fashion and stuff. And then I have, like, my really serious attorney friends, you know.
But would you say also little things that you learn in the modeling field as far as, like, posture or just how to be in front of a camera?
Present yourself.
Does it work in the attorney area?
Yeah, because when you're on a runway, you got to be used to people looking at you. Mm-hmm. They just stare at you. Yeah, yeah. And then when you're in a courtroom, all eyes are on you when you're in front of that judge. So that did help me gain that kind of type of confidence and translate it into my professional world. And when you're on a runway, you got to be confident in what you're wearing. Otherwise, people can tell by your posture. Like, my mom would always tell me, I can tell when you don't like what you're wearing. Because you make the way you carry it. And I'm like, I can't be doing that. Yeah. You know, I got to give every garment its fair share, I guess, mm-hmm. viewing. And same thing with a courtroom or when I'm in a real estate closing. If I don't speak confidently, if I don't walk the walk and talk the talk, then my client's going to have doubts in me.
Yeah.
You know, or the other side, opposing counsel is going to be like, hey, she doesn't know what the hell she's doing. Mm-hmm. So I can get one up on her, or, you know, the judge will get mad at you, like, well, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. So that definitely helped gain confidence in on a runway and meeting designers and just trying on things.
Now, being in the real estate world, mm-hmm. As an attorney there, is it different? Like, the courtroom's different, the setup's different? Like,
yeah, you know what?
I always pictured it, you know, when you think about a lawyer or an attorney, right? You're thinking mm-hmm. of a big old courtroom, because what you see, like, in what is that show? Like NCIS or whatever, one of these law shows, Law and Order.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a big old court, right? And usually it's not like that. I remember when my brother got married, I went to a courtroom and it was a small little courtroom.
Yeah, little dinky one.
Like, where's the big old big, like, bench and all that stuff?
Yeah, so it depends on the courthouse and all that. Okay. Like, the federal courthouses are more, how do I say this, threatening, because you're in this big room, and there's marble, and you have these statues.
Don't you
in
like
there.
That, though? Like, that
I do.
Feeling, like, you, like, whoa.
It's like
I'm
a
important.
Where's the camera at?
Exactly. You're waiting for a crew, because it's like a high-profile case coming out. And some courtrooms aren't like that. Like, 26th Street has some pretty cool ones, too.
Okay.
If you've been in that courthouse. I hope you never have to go to that courthouse, but it's pretty cool. Daily Center is a toss-up. You know, the upper level ones are decent, but once you go start going towards the basement, it's kind of like
like a little room.
It is. It's a little room. It's crowded, and it's not that cute looking. Mm-hmm. But so being in real estate, I'm not in the courtroom often. If I'm in a courtroom, it's for, like, housing violations or landlord-tenant issues and things like that. Usually I'm in a closing room, so it's a conference room. Me, sometimes the other attorney shows up, and my client, sometimes their client shows up. And when I first started, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. You know, here I am telling people, explaining to them their mortgages when I didn't even have a mortgage. And I was 26 at the time. Like, what does this 26-year-old know about mortgages that, you know, I don't know? But when you read those things, it's like a fat stack of documents. I don't know. Have you ever bought a house before?
No, but I'm pretty soon.
Oh my God. It's like a fat stack of documents.
I heard it's really,
And the most important part of it is, hey, you got to pay to stay. Otherwise, I kick you out. Mm-hmm. All right. And all these people are putting you on notice that if you don't pay, they're going to come after you.
Yeah.
That's what you got to take away from it. And one of the most important parts of my job is how somebody takes title, which is something that most other attorneys who are litigators are like, oh, real estate attorneys aren't real attorneys. You're not in the courtroom. No. when the deed comes out, you have to make sure your client's information is perfect. Otherwise, that deed's going to create headaches later. So, like, for example, I just had a case or a transaction. We had a probate. So one of the owners died. He died what's called in tenants in common. So that means his heirs have to vest their interest to the new buyer, basically be in agreement in selling that house.
Interesting. Okay. Is that common?
You know what? It depends on the two, on the people who are on title. And the other person, Tweedledum, decided to file for bankruptcy in the middle of it. So I not only do I have a probate issue, I have a bankruptcy issue.
Yeah.
The first thing I had to do was get the bankruptcy trustee abandon their interest in the property.
So they doesn't take that property.
Exactly. Yeah. That way I can close on it. Then I had to find out who this guy's heirs were, have the heirs sign this deed, and be in agreement with selling this house.
And if they don't want to sign, that means they want
part of that. To get paid out. Yeah, yeah, they want to get paid out. And luckily, everybody was in agreement of getting rid of this property. And we got that close, but that was one of my dirtiest files ever. And you know, sometimes you have short sales. So that's like a foreclosure issue. People who don't pay. And, in order to salvage their credit, you got to negotiate with the bank, which can take forever and make sure they're netting a certain amount from that sale. Otherwise they don't want to do the deal with you.
So are you also involved with the, are you mostly just towards the end of the process of the home buying process, or
I'm like one of the last persons they meet? So usually they meet their lender in the process, and their lender tells them how much they qualify for. Then they go to their realtor, and the realtor shows them the properties houses, that they qualify for. And then the first 5 days of a contract is called attorney review and inspection review. So that's the most important time for me to see it. Once that period expires, I can't do anything for them.
And now, do you only work with certain and you don't have to answer if any if you don't want to. Do you work with certain realtors, or do you, are you free to work with anyone?
Free with everyone. So cool,
I might have to hit you up.
Well, it's my law firm. It's my law firm, so I can work with whoever I want. And
see, I use this podcast for my own kind of
good conniving ways, right? Well, no, hopefully it helps, you know, your viewers as well. But yeah, that's what I do. Most of my clients actually only speak Spanish. So my office is in Pilsen.
And you're fluent?
Yes. Cool. And now I'm even better. Like when I first started, I didn't know.
Because I bet you there's some words, right, that are like legal words that you probably like reciprocity.
Exactly. But to break it down.
Google en español.
And I asked my mom, like, she's a Spanish speaker. Mom, how do you say this? Well, for in order for our people to understand, you should say it this way.
Because it's not a word that you use often.
Exactly.
Sometimes you might lose someone with that conversation if you sound too, you know, legally correct or legal. Just like in English too.
You have to break it down and make it simple for them to remember and understand. Otherwise they're going to be even more lost before you met them.
So within the home buying process too, and I think this might interest a couple people, because we've had realtors here in our show before. Actually our sponsor was is a realtor, and so we get a lot of those people listening to the show that are probably in the home buying process. So explain to me a little bit more of the deed versus the title.
Okay, so they're almost one and the same, but they can be tricky. So the deed actually gets recorded with the county. Okay. And if somebody
a lien on a house, it goes on whoever's on the deed?
It goes on the property. So it depends on the lien. Know, if it's like a tax lien or a construction lien, it's going to go on the property. But if it's like a judgment because you decided not to pay a credit card 5 years ago, it's going to go on your name. And that has to be sorted before closing. Otherwise you can't close. No one's going to insure over that. So the deed gets recorded at after the closing, maybe within 5 days. And on there, it shows who gave you their interest, how you took interest, because you can, there's different ways to take interest. Like for example, there's a quitclaim deed. So I can give you a quitclaim deed for this building that we're in. Pero no sirve. I'm not on title. I can still give you one, pero no sirve. So it can be recorded, but it's not going to be a valid quitclaim deed or anything like that. But the owner can also quitclaim their interest to you, and obviously that's stronger. A warranty deed is typically used when some sort of consideration is given up. So by consideration, I mean money. Like you got to pay, I don't know, some sort of amount of money, and then that's how that warranty deed gets recorded. Title. So a lot of times we close using what's called a title company, and to people it sounds like an obscure thing. It's super important. So when you buy a property in Illinois, you get what's called title insurance from the seller. Mm-hmm. And the seller's promising that they have interest in this property. There's nothing that has happened prior to the closing that can screw up my interest mm-hmm. that I'm giving to you. And if there is something that was missed, if that seller lied, if some taxes were sold prior to closing, then that title company who insured it has to pay the buyer out. And I've had that issue. So it's really important. I only keep it for 7 years. Title companies keep it for 10 years. I tell my buyers keep it forever until you get rid of that property, because I've had that issue previously where the buyer bought the property in 07 and we're trying to sell it now, but their taxes sold in 04.
And they didn't know about it. So who's technically...
responsible? Uh-huh. The title company, because they dropped the ball. You insured over this? Yes, you're supposed to check that. So now they have a claim and they go to the title company saying, hey, you insured over this. You didn't make sure the taxes were paid from 04. I have a claim now. And the title company pays them out.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Thanks for breaking that down. I know that.
I'm like learning so much. Terminology, usually, I'm like, whoa.
And those are and the reason why I like doing that is because within our culture, within our community, we don't talk a lot about that. And sometimes we go blind into a transaction like that.
I see it all the time. They want to sell their house without an attorney.
You can't do that.
Well, there's no law that says you need an attorney to sell your house. But who's going to be looking out for your best interest?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, not the seller. And especially if it's your first time and you don't know what you're doing, just get an attorney. Pay the couple $100. It's not that expensive. It's anywhere from like $400 to $500, maybe $700 for a residential. Commercial, now you're talking different things. I've seen, especially Latinos, be victimized into like selling their properties with a quitclaim deed. And here's $10,000. They get, you know, bamboozled in situations like that.
And it happens a lot more. I feel like it's happening a lot more with it because of gentrification,
mm-hmm.
Because of a lot of Latinos that own big, valuable property within the Humboldt Park community, Pilsen being a big one now.
Mm-hmm.
We had someone here from the Pilsen area that was kind of explaining the same thing. Like, if you're thinking of selling, be careful because there's certain things, certain tactics that they're using to try to get you, to rip you off where you have all this actual value and they're giving you way less.
Yeah, they're undermining. And it's unfortunate because a lot of times our people aren't, educated in that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they probably got the property from their mom or something.
Yeah.
And they just want to get rid of it because somebody made them a dope offer. But they, you know, they could be selling themselves short if they don't go to the right team of people.
So in a case like that, right, they got their property from their mom.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first step to make sure that you could actually sell it?
So is mom alive or no?
Let's say she passed away.
Okay. If mom is not alive anymore, and it depends. So how many kids there are.
And I'm the only child.
You're the only child? Yeah. Okay. So you're the only child. Is mom still married?
No, yeah, okay. So let's give you a big scenario. Mom died. Let's just say mom died, right? You know, she's still alive. Mommy, you're good, right? Let's just say mom was divorced, passed away, only one child.
Mm-hmm.
And that child doesn't have any kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm the only immediate family that person had.
Okay.
So what's the step there?
So you're going to need, if mom doesn't have a will, let's say she doesn't, because normally Latinos don't.
That's another thing. We talked about that before, and I exhort everyone to try to get a will. I just got mine too. And
so
once
important.
I hit 30, I was like, yo,
I'm
putting everything on paper.
You have to. Well, because
even life insurance, man.
Yeah, people don't think about these things. They're like, I'm going to live forever. I'm healthy, blah, blah, blah. You never know. Car accident happens.
Yep.
You're done for. But let's say, okay, mom, she's divorced and since then has not been married. She's deceased. She only has one child. What you're going to need is a will if she doesn't have it. If she doesn't have a will, you need an obituary. Why? Because in that obituary, it distinguishes who her heirs are. So, you know, she's lived by, you know, so-and-so, her son. And after that, you're going to need the death certificate, certified copy of that death certificate.
Let me stop you for a second. So the obituary is done usually by who?
The family. So sometimes families choose not to do one.
I've seen that a lot more.
They choose not to do one. And if the family chooses not to do one, then typically we rely on what's called an affidavit of heirship. So somebody related to her, usually, it's going to be son, if there's only one son, he completes that. And in there, he writes like where she's lived, how old she was, what was the cause of her death, what's the total amount of her assets, any other children she's had, and signs off on that. And title companies rely on that.
Okay.
So you need that obituary, and like if you don't have one, we rely on that. death certificate, and that's it. It's not that hard.
Yeah,
it's really not that hard.
I was just wondering. I know that there's a lot of, I always try to put that scenario out mm-hmm. where you don't have certain things done the correct way, and I try to get our community to do that because there's a reason why it's there, you know, getting, you know, your will done and life insurance, all these little things here and there, because it makes it easier later on proving certain things. I've seen people going to court about the dumbest stuff for so long because no one, you know, they didn't put their things in the correct order. Make sure that your legacy is good. Yeah. I think we're getting close to the end of the podcast, and I love it. It's been a good conversation.
It was. Thank you.
If anybody wants to reach out to you, do you have social media you want to share?
Yes. Or? So my social media handle is Lowky. So it's LOW_KY_, or you can enter in my name, Kiara C. Garza, ESQ, and you'll find me. Facebook, I'm just Kiara Garza, KYARA. Last name, Garza, GARZA.
Awesome. So you guys heard it here. Thank you so much for coming by today to the podcast, giving us a little, enlightening us a little bit more on this, the home buying process, the how to become an attorney, the difference between attorney, lawyer, Esquire.
Yeah, it can be confusing.
A lot today. A lot.
I feel like we could keep going too with a bunch of other questions that I have, but I'm not going to do that to you. So
next
we're just
time. Right?
So thank you so much, people. If you could go ahead and share, like, and subscribe to this podcast, just tag us and feel free to check out any of her social media platforms out there as well. The podcast will be up on video format and audio. So if you're listening to us in the audio, you'll see the link to the video right on the description of this podcast. Once again, thank you guys so much. And thank you, Marissa, for joining me.
Thank you. Right.
Peace and God bless.
Thank you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.